Okay, and we're rolling. I always wonder what the first words I'm going to say on the tape will be, because they're never the first words that I actually say in my talk. So I'm sure it's a different experience for people listening on the tape than people in the room. Are you able to hear me at that? Okay. It's very interesting acoustics in this room. So, let's get this up and running. No, not that one. Down here. Okay. I'm sorry about the title, but I couldn't resist. The roles and responsibilities part is an homage to the actual title of this presentation, which at one time back in theory somewhere when I was in Canada was describing what this session was supposed to be. It's sort of that, and it's sort of not. The session was advertised as a manager's breakfast or a manager's and director's breakfast, and I thought to myself, what do I know about management? So it put me in a bit of a conundrum because, my role has always been as an instructor, as a technologist, the gnome in the back room with the three computer screens and all of that. The managers, I've always considered them to be the other side, right? The enemy. And the proof of that is that we're doing a breakfast talk. I'm not a breakfast person. So, if I fall asleep during my own talk, it's not because I was boring. It's because I'm not used to talking this early. So anyhow, I'm thinking about that. I'm not a management consultant or a management guru or anything like that. I don't have qualifications to do that. Nor either do I work in your environment. So I'm not really in a position to say, well, you should do this or you should do that and so on and so forth. So I'm kind of stuck for what to do for a talk. But what I do know is technology. I know technology really well. I grew up with it. I tell people, only half jokingly, I live on the internet. I install and run, several pieces of software every day for this, that, or the other reason. I write software. All of my website is written in software that I've written myself. And I understand the internet. I understand the internet in the mode of what Tapscott and others call the digital native. Again, I grew up with technology. I grew up with Pong. I played Pong when it came out. I've played video games and all of that. I've surfed on the web. I've designed and run multi-user domains, which are types of internet games. So I've got that part pretty well. I think I really have the web. So how do I merge that? How do I give you something you can use from the point of view of managers and directors, from the perspective that I have, which is more of a technologist, more of an internet user? So I thought about that for a while, sort of wandering. I'd pace back and forth. Grind my teeth. What am I going to say? And I figure, well, okay. Let's think of all the people that work in your units and your departments. What would be the one thing that they would like me to say? And they would probably say something like, well, at the very least, make sure that they don't invest in bad technology. I thought about this. I thought, well, that might be a good way to get this off the ground, to talk about the sorts of technology that would be good technology. And I did write a paper about good technology two or three years back. It was very popular. I thought, okay, that's a good angle. So I decided to go with that. But then I thought a little bit more about that. I thought, well, from my perspective, right, the ant in the maze perspective, managers aren't people. Managers are just, well, I don't want to say just tools, because in Canada, anyways, that has implications. But they're a type of technology. And so I was thinking, instead of telling you what to do, because I don't know what to do, and I'm not going to pretend that I do, I'm going to talk about, from the point of view of a cyber person, what would be good technology in a manager. So think of yourself, of yourselves for a little bit as bits of technology that I interact with. And just as an aside, I really do see the world that way. I see it all as interactions, data flows, things like that. Because that's just the odd way of seeing the world. So there we go. The talk truly will be a dog's breakfast. And it truly will talk about roles and responsibilities for managers in the cyber era. And it will actually be something I know about. I've somehow put it all together. I feel so smart. So when I was talking to Chris about what this topic, what this talk should be about, because I figured I should have some clue, she was talking about, well, the big issue with people in your position is sort of twofold. On the one hand, it's how to get the people who are working with you, working for you, to adopt a lot of the new technology that you know about and that you'd like to implement in the schools and in the colleges and in the universities. So maybe learning management systems, maybe just getting them to read their email. And also, too, you are working for people, and I'm sure that certainly was the case in my life, working for people above you who don't really have any idea about technology at all. You know, the manager of the technology division gets someone else to read their email. I have actually worked in an environment like that where it's the manager of a technology division won't read their email. And so the point was, well, how do you convince those people? There's been a lot of work in technology rollouts, and where I live in New Brunswick, there was a very large implementation of a technology plan. That basically, they wired the entire province with fiber, and they had a program whereby people got tax rebates if they bought computers. The centerpiece of that project was to have the government be what they said a model user. And you've probably heard that phrase before, perhaps. But so, in thinking about the best way to implement technology in a workplace, either for people who work for you or above you, it seems to me, and this is the approach that I've taken, to emulate the use of technology that you're trying to encourage. Because I'm sure you know, there's nothing worse than trying to tell people to do something when you won't do it yourself. So, now we've got several things on the go here. We've got what constitutes good technology, we've got what constitutes a good manager from the point of view of a technologist, and then the sorts of things you need to do to emulate the type of technology you'd like people to adopt. That's the intro. And now that I'm half done, probably am about half done, aren't I? Okay, I had a cord stuck to my foot. I'm being very careful because I have another dog's breakfast here beside this table. It all begins and ends, in my mind, with good technology. Because the worst thing that anyone can do is encourage people to use technology that doesn't work. And there are so many ways technology cannot work. And my life as a technologist has been a history of technology that doesn't work. They tell me in my office, but you're too picky, you always expect things to work. And I sort of go, yeah. Because in the rest of my life, things work. You know, you wouldn't say I was too picky if I went into an elevator and it failed to function. You know, I'm not too picky if I try to dial emergency services on my telephone and get the pizza parlor. You know, if my car, I don't have a car, if my bicycle takes 20 minutes to start up in the morning, this is not good. And if it sometimes ceases to function halfway to work, I'm not being picky. So I have very high standards for technology. I've thought about this, and I've resolved them into what are basically 9 rules. So in front of each of these rules, you can preface, I was too lazy to type it, preface the phrase, good technology is, dot, dot, dot. But also preface the phrase, good management is, dot, dot, dot. I get so pleased with myself putting that together. All right. Good technology is always available. One of the classics in the school system, and every time I've talked about this at school, everybody nods knowingly when I talk about the equipment cart. And I'm sure you all know the equipment cart that I mean. It's the one with four wheels. It has something on the top, maybe a projector. When I was younger, it was always the what do they call those things? The overhead. They call it, the overhead. So on and so forth. And it was available a week from next Friday. And so you were scheduling your use of the technology. Today's version of that, of course, is the ubiquitous computer lab that students can use 1 hour a day, 3 days of the week. And this is access to technology. That's not what good technology is. Good technology is technology that's always there. There's a clock on the wall. That clock is a classic example of good technology because it's not available just some of the time. It's always there. Now, looking at that from the point of view of managers, in a sense, it's like saying that a good manager is always available. Now, you might think, well, how can I say that? But this is like in the digital world. This is life in Siberia. The one that starts with a CY rather than an SI, because that's just a cold, frozen wasteland. I was talking in Canberra a few days ago about the new students. And one of the characteristics that Tab's gotten others talk about of the digital generation is that they operate at twitch speed. Twitch speed means they put something out, they expect a response. So, in this era, the manager needs to be always available in the sense that when you contact the manager, you get a response. It's a pretty simple thing, but from the point of view of a technologist, there's nothing worse than, I need a solution on this software purchase, and the manager comes back, I'll study it, I'll get back to you in 4 to 6 weeks. Because by then, the next version of the software will have come out. That's life on the internet. By then, the need for the software will have evaporated. People would have gone on to do other things. So that's a simple first principle. Good technology is always on. Now, you might think that's really odd. How can it always be on? But the type of technology that gives people the most frustration is the technology that sometimes goes off, sometimes goes on, you have to restart it. Windows is like that. How many of you use Windows? Right. More, three quarters, four fifths. How many of you like Windows? All right, not one hand. Pardon? That's true, yeah. There's Windows and then there's, nothing, right? Myself, I use Linux, although Linux is not yet an example of good technology. It breaks about 8 of these 9 rules. Then there is Macintosh. I've always avoided Macintosh because I'm not independently wealthy and it's always been too expensive for me. So, yeah, pretty much you live in a Windows world. But it still doesn't make a good technology. Even if you have to use it, it can still be bad technology. And it's bad technology in this way. Good technology is on when you need it to be running. And I don't know if you can see these very well, but streetlights. Streetlights are on when you need them. They're not on when you don't need them. And you don't need to go through a startup process for streetlights, which is a really good thing. Then, well, it's like the days of the gas lamps. You'd have to send somebody out and around to light them. It's a really labor-intensive process. They adapt to the environment. They're aware of when they're needed, and when they're needed, they're in a position to respond appropriately. Telephones as well, the same sort of thing. When you need a telephone, it's there. Now, when I say always on, I'm not saying that a manager should be working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Even if you expect that of your staff, I wouldn't expect that of managers. That was a joke. It wasn't a good one. But I sometimes wonder about these jokes because I know they sometimes won't fly,
But I say them anyways.
Because I thought it was funny. So, but the idea is here, in terms of management principles or whatever, being aware of the environment, being ready with the solution when the question is asked. And that's not an easy thing to do, and I'm not going to give you all the mechanics because that'd be like a 3-hour task. And for the people on the microphone, everybody right now is watching Chris move the big moving walls. And it really is fascinating. That's good technology, mostly. I mean, there are a couple of things that are off about it, but for the most part, that's good technology. It's there. It's working, more or less.
Right.
Now we're getting from the more common sense to the more interesting things, the things that are beginning to change in our new environment. Good technology is always connected. Now, if you think about it, our desk technology are like that. The fire alarm, I think, is a classic example of that. Fire alarm wouldn't work if it wasn't connected. You really want it to be connected to something. Either a fire sensor, or if you have a really good fire alarm, it'll connect directly into the fire department. Telephones. Telephones wouldn't work at all if they're not connected. Same is true of a fax machine. For the most part, the same thing is true of a computer. Good technology functions as part of a network. It doesn't necessarily simply stand alone, but it interacts, preferably in something like an intelligent fashion, with the other things around it. Good technology is something that has the capacity to receive and transmit information. And it understands that this is its function, and so it's in this position to do that. From the point of view of management, being connected, again, I'm saying not like a cog in a machine, because we're not really in that machine environment anymore, but like the node in a network. I've always taken the point of view of managers that one of their important functions is to act as conduits of information. You know, we used to live in the world, and I emphasize the used to live in the world, where the role of a manager was to manage, to tell people what to do. But I think that we're moving further and further away from that model of management. And I actually do read business books from time to time. You get the slogans like democracy in the workplace and all of that. And it's not like we're going to have votes on the operating budget or anything like that. But the role of the manager is shifting from the person who directs all activity to the person who facilitates, who makes sure the communication flow is working, makes sure that the flow of resources is there. And the reason for that, according to the various commentators that I've read, and I do agree with them, is that our current environment has become too complex for anybody to understand fully. I'm supposed to be an expert in this field. I don't understand this field. I'd like to say I understand this field, but every time I sit down and talk to somebody in this field, they know more about something in it than I do. You can't understand it all. So it's important that decision-making be what they describe as distributed. And the way distributed decision-making works is that the flow of communication is there. And it's the flow of communication that allows the decision-making process to occur. There's lots of stuff, especially recently in the science of social networks that's developed over the last 5 years. People like Duncan J. Watts, people, I forget his name, but the guy who wrote The Wisdom of Crowds, which you may have seen kicking about, a book called Nexus, a book called Link. These resources either are on my website or will be on my website. So, and at the end of the talk, I'll direct you to the wiki on my website that will link you to these things. But again, it's the role of the network as a communications device to facilitate the distributed making of decisions. That's what I mean by always connected. As an aside, your software should work like that too. And a number of the things that I talk about in the software that you should buy or that you should acquire will reflect this theme. Standardized. Well, that's the big watchword for today. You've all heard of the word metadata, right? Metadata isn't really what I mean by standardized. Standardization is just this horrible, horrible quagmire that technology, and especially educational technology, has gotten itself into. I've spent many sleepless nights on this topic. We hear a lot about metadata and what metadata is supposed to do for us. But metadata is standardization at what I call the semantical level. It's standardization at the level of the meaning of terms, of the content of ideas. Standardization at that level is groupthink. And from a management point of view, it's like everybody's playing in the same band kind of attitude. That's not what I mean. By standardized, the way standardization works in the rest of the world, outside of our discipline, is in the interfaces. I represent that by saying standardization should apply to the syntax and not the semantics of the communication. If you look at a light bulb, standardization in a light bulb isn't about how bright the light bulb should be, what the filament should be, what color the light should be. Standardization in a light bulb is how you screw it into the wall. It's the interface. It's the syntax of the interaction between the light bulb and the wall. That's what standardization is in this context as well. So the more there is a push to standardize meaning, standardized content, I think that that's a weakness. That's going in the wrong direction. But if there's a standardization of interface, now we have a system that we can work with. And the idea here is that people know what to expect. So from the point of view of management, like the big trend is, well, let's have a vision statement. And everybody will follow this vision. That's standardization of semantics. And from the point of view of one of the peons, I'm not going to buy into the vision. It's not going to happen. Maybe I'll buy into part of it, but I'm not going to buy into the whole thing, because that's your vision. I'm here in this workplace. I'm on a completely different program. What I'm about, well, in my case, what I'm about is doing my philosophy. I'm a technologist by trade, but I'm a philosopher by training. And I'm up to that sort of thing. And I've expressed to managers very explicitly, and it's always interesting to see the reaction. My working for you is an exchange of mutual value. That's what it is. You are giving me something that you think I want. Money, some resources, some contacts, maybe a little advertising. I'm giving you things that you want. It's an exchange of mutual value. It is not necessary for all of us to be on the same program. All that is necessary is that we have these mechanisms of interaction so that the exchange of mutual value can take place in a seamless way. Standardization and management. Now, my next piece of advice is that managers should be simple. Okay, that's not what I mean. But, I mean, this is the huge thing with technology. It's the huge thing with the technology that you're trying to roll out in your institution, isn't it? It's called feature bloat. And the idea is that, you know, you got a new piece of technology. It's got 8 more features than the other piece of technology. You look in the trade magazines and all of that, and they actually run feature comparisons, right? And it's a scorecard. You just count up the check marks, and the one with the most check marks wins. Mostly, that's a terrible guide to good technology. The best technology online right now, by far and away, Google. Think about Google. Think about the Google interface, especially when it first came out, although it's hardly changed since then, right? The name at the top, Google, because you need to know where you are. A little search field, and a button that says search, and that's it. Simple. I was asked when I worked in Alberta I was working with the Department of Municipal Affairs in Alberta, and they said, well, how would you design the government interface, the one-stop portal for everybody in the province? Because I was building a portal for municipal administrators, in fact, did so. It's still running today. It's called munimall.net. And I said to them, well, I built it like Google, right? Government of Alberta, a little box. What would you like? Type it in. Even better, you'll be able to speak it in, but we're not to that point yet. So type it in. And the system behind the scenes picks it up. No features, no menu, no 8-level hierarchy to find all these predefined categories. Just a box. And I think learning should be like that. You know, web management systems, or learning management systems, when they started out, they were actually fairly simple. They weren't as simple as I would have liked. But over time, they got more and more and more complicated, harder to use, more expensive, much more expensive. My operating principle is, if you need a manual to operate it, it's broken. The best people to look at for this sort of thing are the people who manufacture video games. Because, again, Twitch generation, right? Game players won't read the manual. Period. Won't. Well, okay, some of the older ones will. But I read the manual once I find I can't get through the cage of steel. So I'm like, okay. Back, and maybe I'll look at the manual now, because it's been like 20 hours, I've been at this solid, I can't get past this door, maybe there's a clue. But typically, they won't read the instructions. Game designers have had to learn how to teach the person how to use the program as they are running the program. And there's a whole science of it. I can't go into any sort of detail about that here. But if you look at online games and they step you through levels, layers of progressive difficulty, the functionality is available on an as-needed basis. There's a whole set of principles that evolved out of this. But they have evolved out of the principle of simplicity. And as a manager, you should be simple. And I don't mean simple as in not complicated, but I mean simple to understand, simple to communicate with. There isn't a process involving 8 steps to get an idea from the person on the floor to the person in the boardroom. Reading about the organization of companies like Toyota and things like that in Japan, there's like 3 layers from the person on the floor to the CEO. And so an idea can move very quickly through the system. And it's important to organize the structure of management in an organization with the idea of making the speed of information from one end of the system to the other end of the system go as quickly and as simply as possible. And it all comes back again to getting that communication flowing. Because that's what the internet is. The internet isn't technology. The internet isn't Microsoft Windows or Microsoft Word. The internet is communication. And it's not by coincidence that the first line of the document called The Clue Train Manifesto is markets are conversations. And I would say the marketplace is a conversation. The learning environment is a conversation. And so the idea is to make teaching and learning online as simple as having a conversation. Here's a big bugbear for people who buy technology. You buy a piece of technology and you realize you are committed to that company for life, plus some, because the technology lives on even after you've gone. Good technology doesn't require parts. Now, this is one of these things where you can't have the ideal world. There's always going to be some parts required by some technology. And and we're facing practical limits in many cases. But in the ideal world, your car would not require gas and oil. Think how much nicer your car would be if you didn't have to go to the gas station every few days. Think about how much cheaper it would be to run. Printers and printer cartridges. The printer cartridge industry, well, I probably shouldn't say it's a huge scam, but it's a huge scam. And printer cartridges have become such a big industry, at least in my country, and probably here. They have little kiosks in the mall selling these things. Who would have believed that printer cartridges would be like that? You know, this is in the paperless world. Today's new generation of parts, and parts are like gold to a technology company. So even in technology that doesn't require parts, they've invented parts that you have to make them work. And licenses is one of the classics. I was on an airplane. Where was I on the airplane from? From Saskatoon, which is in Western Canada, to my home in Eastern Canada. I'm looking at 5-6 hours on the airplane. I have this puppy here, and I have a little CD player, and that has a part, right? It's the CD that goes into it, so I don't like those parts. So I just had the music file on the computer. That's an improvement. I go to listen to my music. Real Media has expired. It wants another part. It wants, I don't know what it wants. It didn't tell me. It just said, you have to log on to the internet in order to upgrade Real Media. Well, I'm on an airplane. I'm at 35,000 feet. I've got another 4 hours of flight ahead of me. I'm not going to be logging onto the internet anytime soon. This is something that is broken. Unequivocally broken. Good technology is complete. It functions out of the box. It doesn't require this constant input of this, that, or the other thing. Now, when I was putting this together, I was trying to think of, okay, well, what would be the analogy in the world of management? And quite frankly, I didn't come up with one. So I don't have the pithy thing here to draw that in, but perhaps from your own experience, you can think of that. I don't know, the manager that needs to be constantly fed or something like that. Maybe that's the wrong thing to say at a manager breakfast, but... Yeah, managers that need to be massaged to or given the right answer. That's excellent. Yeah. And I hear that so often. Well, we have to present our case in just such and such a way. And it's so awful to work with a person like that because really you want to put the case in the way that it should be put rather than have to massage it. So, yeah, that's a really good one. I like that one. If I ever do this talk again, I'll use it. If they ever let me do this talk again. Yeah, you're going to let me get away with it? Good technology is personalized. There's been a lot of talk in the world about customization and personalization. Personalization is like the ATM machine, which you would really rather gave access to your account and only your account, and more importantly, gave other people access to their account and only their account. But I'm not so concerned about being restricted to my account. I'd be happy with all the accounts, but I don't want other people dipping into my account. Good technology is like telephones, where each person has a telephone number. Like email. Email is not good technology in many ways, but it is good technology in the sense that each one of us has an identity in the system. And if this isn't, I've been involved in big debates with people in the online news community. I'm a member of the online journalism mailing list, and I interact with a lot of these people. And the big trend in online newspapers, and in fact The Age and I think the Sydney Morning Herald just recently did that, put up user registration. And they're saying, well, this allows us to personalize our offering. This is not what I mean by personalization, because there is utterly no benefit to the subscriber of this kind of personalization. The entire purpose of them doing it is so that they can get better advertising revenue from their advertisers. Me as a reader, there's no upside here. I'm not getting anything for the personalization. Personalization means that when I get something that is unique and individual to me, I can identify myself. And there's so much of the discussion on the web, and if you're involved in things like content repositories and learning management systems and things like that, there's all this talk about authentication and confirming that you are who you are. There's a dirty little secret about passwords. And it's funny because nobody talks about this. There's a whole shibboleth program, and you know, just got to lock down these things. Passwords work only if the person who has the password has an incentive to keep it secret. Now, if the only beneficiary to a user identity is the service provider and not the user, that benefit, that motivation to keep the password secret doesn't exist. So, the mechanism of locking down and authenticating learning systems or passwords or whatever is fundamentally flawed. The only way to establish identity online is through services that are tailored to the individual. And unless and until learning technology is at a place where it is ready to do that, forget about authentication, forget about passwords, forget about secure content, won't happen. Because people share passwords, and you can't stop that. Here we're moving to another bugbear of mine. And Chris, if I'm running too long, tell me to stop. Okay. Good technology is modular. The two most hated words right now in my vocabulary, enterprise system. An enterprise system is almost the opposite of this criteria for good technology. A really good example of something that should be modular but isn't is Microsoft Windows. Microsoft Windows is this seamless interface, so seamless they made the web browser part of the operating system. And you make a change in the media player and it shows up in Microsoft Word. This is not modular technology. Microsoft Word is all smooshed together technology. It's like the enterprise system in a box. And the problem with that is that it's incredibly vulnerable. When one part breaks, the result of that ripples through the system. If there's one typo in one new application, say, the service pack that you get to install or to get to repair Outlook, because Outlook does constantly break, nothing works. It makes it vulnerable to viruses who have this seamless access from your email system to your Microsoft Word to Windows to the kernel. As well, and of course, this is why Microsoft is so integrated like this, at least according to the U.S. Department of Justice, is because when it's all integrated, you can't mix and match. It's very hard in Windows to swap out one thing and swap in another. Now, there are, at some level, you can do it. It is theoretically possible for me to use the Firefox browser on Microsoft Windows. Now, Microsoft Windows constantly complains and would really prefer that I used Internet Explorer, but it's possible. But anything below the application level, there's no way of swapping things out. Don't like Microsoft security system? There is no such thing as a plug-in security system for Windows. This becomes even more pervasive when we get beyond the desktop and we start talking about institution-wide systems. And there is this push on, and you see this push a lot, to integrate the system, get them working closely in concert. That is a mistake. It's a huge mistake. And it's going to result in computer systems enterprise-wide that are incredibly flaky, prone to attacks, prone to viruses, and that will fail on a repeated and regular basis. The model now that they're talking about, the next generation of e-learning system, the thing that comes after Blackboard and WebCT, is this Java-based API, so fully integrated, common services kind of model. And I'm sitting there and I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, it's going to break. It's going to break all the time. I see this coming a mile away. People say you can't predict the future. I'm predicting the future. If they roll this out, it will break. This is back to the network thing that I talked about. You as a manager might be thinking, let's get everybody integrated. Get everybody integrated, tightly integrated, so that everybody depends on everyone else in as tight a fashion as possible, it will break. The model of workplace organization that I strongly, strongly favor is a distributed, decentralized model with as much autonomy and independence in the parts where there are interactions. Of course, there have to be interactions, but it's small pieces loosely joined. You know, keep it small, keep it informal, keep it loose, keep it flowing. That's the internet way. Great technology websites. Not SAP. The thing that changed the world was websites. Websites are small, simple, loosely joined. We're almost there. This is the last one. Good technology does what you want it to do. When I got on that airplane in LA, I expected it to land in Sydney. I would have been most disappointed if I had instead found myself in Osaka. If I call on the telephone, and I'm calling an emergency place and I get instead a pizza place, this is technology that failed. Your technology has to do what you expect it to do, and not other things. Again, I come back to Windows so many times. You know, I do something in Windows and something else happens, and who knows what happened because it didn't tell me. Good technology tells you what it's going to do and then does it. No more, no less. Doesn't reconfigure your system. Doesn't, this computer, I'm surprised we haven't had this. This computer is constantly trying to call the internet. I don't know why. I don't have any web programs running, but it's Windows. It wants to chat. The function of a good manager is to do what you want the manager to do. I've always considered as an employee, as one of the serfs, one of the peons, I've always looked at managers as my employee. And I know that's turning the system upside down. I know it's a horrible impertinence, but from my perspective, from my world, the manager is there to help me do my job. And I figure my job must be pretty important because first of all, I'm at the bottom. That's a clear clue that it's pretty important. I'm at the business end of the enterprise, right? The person generating the revenue. And all of this infrastructure, human resources, management, all of that is set up so that I can sit there and do the stuff that brings in revenue for the company. So, in what sense am I working for them? They're working for me. So, what is the job that they are doing for me? They're doing two things. First of all, communication. They're making sure that the things I know can get out there to other people, can distribute through the network that we call a company. And things out there that are going to impact me can flow down. A company policy should never be a mystery. Company policy should be something that I have on my fingertips when I need it, and only when I need it. And then the other thing is the provision of resources. I'm an ant. I need to eat. So I need the resources every once in a while in order to get the job done. And when communication and when the provision of resources become, as they say, management tools, right? What you're doing with such a management strategy is you're blocking the flow of blood to the part of the enterprise that makes the money. And if you think about that, it's not rational. And there may be other ways to manage, and as I'm trying to suggest in this talk, to manage by example, to demonstrate the behaviors that you would like to see emulated. But cutting the flow of information, cutting the flow of resources, again, is not rational. It's the parts at the end that do the work. They need to be fed. So that's my talk. That's what I know about management. It's not a lot, admittedly, but I do think that the idea of new technology and new networks tells us something not just about the tools that we're working with. It tells us something about the way we should be working with our tools. And I think it's useful. I hope you found it useful. And I thank you all very much for your time.
Thank you, Stephen. For a man who's not a morning person, you do all right, mate. The next session is going to kick off about 9:30, and it's in Lecture Theatre 3, which is just at the end of the pathway to the door. In that time, if you're going to be here for that first session, feel free to chat with Stephen and us.